Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another really good revision history podcast with me, Mr. Hutchison. And this is where we start focusing on the two rock stars of our course. So rather than talking about life in medieval England in general, we now start to focus on the reigns of King Richard and King John. And absolutely rightly, we start thinking about King Richard, the most famous event during his reign was, of course, the Third Crusade. And that is what this podcast is all about. So this is quite a big part of the course because Richard doesn't live that much longer afterwards. So this arguably is the sort of main event that sort of characterizes his entire reign. And so because of that, we're going to be going through it in quite a bit of detail. And so I'm going to break this down. Otherwise, this podcast would be quite long. Okay, so this episode is all about the journey. What happens on the way to the crusade? Because, you know, it took a very long time to move between Europe and the Holy Land, you know, what is modern day Israel or Kingdom of Jerusalem, as it was known then, by the Crusaders. A journey that took many months, and it was quite an eventful journey for Richard, as we're going to find out in a minute. So, just recapping last episode then, where we thought about why people in general would have wanted to go on crusade. This all stems back to 1099. In 1099, during the First Crusade, Jerusalem had been conquered. In fact, an entire country, if you like, an entire kingdom had been carved out of that part of the world. Edessa, Antioch, Tripoli, Jerusalem. This was a huge geographical area that spread throughout what is now sort of modern day Palestine and Israel, all through what the Crusaders called the Holy Land. So it wasn't just Jerusalem, it was an entire kingdom. It had its own king, and that had been the case since 1099. Obviously, the surrounding Muslim countries weren't especially happy with the fact that Crusaders had come and settled in their lands. It took quite a while for them to put up a decent sort of counter to that and start taking land back, but they indeed did start doing that. And in 1187, so the best part of 100 years, 90 years after this kingdom was kind of carved out by the Crusaders, 1187, Jerusalem was taken back by a man called Saladin, who united Muslim forces, Assyrians, Kurds and Egyptians, and managed to conquer or reconquer Jerusalem. Now, I think to remember here is in 1099, when the Christian Crusaders took it, they killed everyone. They slaughtered everyone. The streets ran red with blood, and that is where the phrase comes from. So Saladin, even though he wasn't there personally, he would have known the story. So in 1187, he could have taken revenge, but he doesn't. He lets all of the Christian occupants go. He kills a few of the more extreme Christians that killed Muslims for fun. But essentially, he let everyone go. And that included the Jerusalem, or the king, the Christian king of Jerusalem, who is a man by the name of Guy de Lusignan. So King Guy, if you like, Guy the First. Now, Saladin lets them all go on the proviso that they return back to Europe. Saladin wanted to show that Islam was morally superior to Christianity. And so they swore an oath to him to return home, and he lets them all go. But despite that, news would have spread throughout Europe, and people back at home in Europe, throughout Christendom, all the Christian countries would have been horrified. Okay, they thought it was their right and their duty to control Jerusalem. So when it falls back into Muslim hands, they are outraged, okay? Pope Gregory the Eighth calls a new crusade, and he doesn't last very long, a new pope. So in some books you might see Pope Clement III, he continues the pressing the people of Christendom to go on crusade. So Pope Gregory, anyway, calls a new crusade, the Third Crusade, to win the Holy Land back. The Second Crusade ended in failure. That started when Edessa, part of the Kingdom of Jerusalem, had been conquered or fallen back into Muslim hands. So bunch of Christians, including Eleanor of Aquitaine, Richard and John's mother, and Frederick Barbarossa, who we'll learn a little bit about later in the podcast, head over during the Second Crusade, but it ends in total failure. So this is the Third Crusade to win back Jerusalem, the jewel in the crown, the main reason why the Christians had carved out a kingdom over there, the kingdom of Outremer, the reason they carved this kingdom out in the first place, okay? So they're horrified, and it's made worse by the fact that priests back at home spread lies, propaganda, about what the Muslims are doing in the streets of Jerusalem to Christians, you know, killing them and dragging the cross through the streets, through the mud, and defecating, going to the toilet all over it. All these things are not true, guys, okay? But people back home believed, and they were outraged. So they were desperate to go for all the reasons we looked at in the previous podcast. Richard himself was desperate to go. First of all, he was a religious, he was totally devoted Catholic, and he saw the Crusade as his sacred duty. He wanted personal glory. He wanted to be remembered as a great warrior that was sung about and talked about for hundreds of years afterwards. And I suppose he did achieve that, because here I am in a podcast talking about him 800 years later. So he wanted that as well. He wanted the opportunity to test himself against this guy Saladin, who is being praised as one of the great military tacticians of all time. He wanted to, you know, come up against this guy and test himself against this supposed incredible military general. He had personal connections as well. He was related to the King of Jerusalem, and fighting the Holy Land was in his blood. As I mentioned previously, Eleanor of Aquitaine's mother had been on the Second Crusade. It's what the Plantagenets did. They went on crusade. It was like a family tradition. So he felt that he had to as well. And finally, of course, the crusade was called in 1187, but in 1189 he becomes king. So he's got the opportunity, guys. He's got the wealth, he's got the power, he's got the means, and as we looked at in a previous podcast, he was able to tax the people of England heavily with the Saladin tithe to create or raise an incredible state-of-the-art, no expense spared crusading army, and that's exactly what he did. So in 1190, he sets off, but he's not the only king that does. Three kings take up the call, actually, along with a bunch of important barons. I think in some places it's written that over 100,000 crusaders went on this crusade. I think it's difficult to know exactly how many people went, but certainly we're talking in the tens of thousands. We're talking knights, we're talking peasants, we're talking men at arms, so peasant soldiers, priests, you name it. This was a huge undertaking, okay? The three kings each had a massive army behind them, marching into the Holy Land to take back Jerusalem. And indeed, they would need it. They would need it if they had any hope of success. So the three kings that went there were Richard I of England, Philip II, his great rival from France, and Frederick Barbarossa of the Holy Roman Empire, or modern-day Germany, basically. And Barbarossa was effectively the leader. He wasn't officially, it's just that he was the most elderly. He was elderly at this point, but he was the oldest, he was the most experienced, arguably the most powerful. He was quite a sort of loud, bombastic character. So he was unofficially the leader. He's certainly the peacekeeper between the two. And as the eldest and the most experienced, the other two probably would have looked to him for that little bit of leadership. Indeed, Barbarossa had been on the Second Crusade, so he had that experience. There was a great rivalry between the other two, Philip II and Richard. First of all, don't forget that Richard had half the lands in what is modern-day France, okay? And Philip wanted to extend his lands there. So in order, if he was going to do that, he needed to take those lands from the Angevin Empire. So that, of course, created a bit of a rivalry between them. Philip II as well also tried to marry Richard to his sister Alice to kind of bring the kingdoms together. And as part of the dowry, as part of the down payment, that the gift, if you like, for making that happen, Richard was given some land in France called the Vexin. Now, the Vexin stretches between the capital of Normandy, which is Rouen, and Paris. And there's not that, it's not as big a sort of area between those two places as you think. And by gifting him the land in between, that is a massive sort of symbol of trust, a real sort of olive branch, you know, a want to a show of trust and a want to ally with Richard. So Richard takes the land, but he's yet to marry Alice's sister, okay? And what makes the rivalry even worse is that Barbarossa, Redbeards, Emperor of Germany, he doesn't even make it to the crusade, okay, guys? He dies on the way. In June 1190, he drowns crossing a river. So now the most experienced leader out of the three kings doesn't make it to the Holy Land, and a bunch of his troops leave with him, which means that the crusade is weakened even before they get there. The three kings, of course, are travelling separately. They travel across the land and then by boat from mainland Europe to Messina. Now, Messina is in modern-day Sicily, and it was like the stopping-off point, the break, if you like, and then crusaders tended to sail directly from Sicily into Acre and the Holy Land. So when both kings arrive in Messina, Philip, I believe, arrives first, Richard arrives second, Richard gets a hero's welcome. Cheering in the streets, you know, an absolute huge hero's welcome. He arrives to massive fanfare. Richard is a medieval celebrity. He's the most famous warrior in all of Christendom, even at this point. So, you know, they're supposed to be equals, Philip and Richard. So, you know, this could well have made Philip a little bit jealous, making that rivalry even more intense. When Richard arrives in Messina, Eleanor of Aquitaine's mother turns up with a potential new bride, a lady by the name of Berengaria of Navarre, which is in sort of modern day Spain, and presents this potential new bride as a different option to Alice. And she persuades Richard to marry her. Okay. When they set off from Messina, bizarrely, Berengaria and Eleanor of Aquitaine take a different ship to Richard. And as they're sailing past Greece, they are hit by a storm and they crash land, if you like, or you know, they're don't want to say maroon, but they hit the coast of Cyprus. And the King of Cyprus sees a huge opportunity here. He captures Eleanor of Aquitaine and Berengaria, Richard's proposed wife, and sees it as an opportunity to ransom them back and make a lot of money. Richard's not having this, okay? Richard's not having this. He lands in Cyprus and not only rescues his soon-to-be bride and his mother, but conquers the entire island in doing so, in typical Richard fashion. Okay, that's what he does. He conquers the whole island. And then whilst he's there, he marries Berengaria, okay? So now he's got a wife who isn't Alice, which is what he agreed with Philip. Berengaria and Eleanor of Aquitaine then head off home, and Richard goes from Cyprus to the Holy Land. Later on, he sells Cyprus to the Knights Templar. Anyway, from the spoils of war, from sacking and raiding, he makes a lot of money out of Cyprus. When he arrives in Acre, where Philip already is, Philip demands some of the spoils from conquering Cyprus. The two kings had agreed that that's what would happen. They'd share all the spoils 50-50. But Richard disagrees and refuses. Okay, he believes that this wasn't part of the crusade. It happened on the way. And so refuses to give Philip even any share. And, of course, Richard had spurned Alice, who was Philip's sister. And he'd taken the vexin, that area of land, as a dowry, and then refused to marry Philip's sister. Now, even though Philip had agreed to this and released Richard from his vow, it was still humiliating for him. All right, so by the time the two kings who had survived the journey arrive in Acre, there's already a huge rivalry between them. And of course, that massively disrupts the potential success of the crusade. Firstly, the most experienced king dies on the way, and now the two other kings are at each other's throats. Okay, they're not getting on, and so they disagree over everything, they're arguing, and it massively hurts the crusade's chance of success. And to make matters worse, they both disagree on who should be king of Jerusalem. Typical European crusader arrogance. They haven't even taken Jerusalem yet. They're not even close to taking it. Yet they disagree and are arguing over who should be king when they do. Okay, so Richard thinks that Guy de Lusignan, the man who was supposed to be king in the first place, king of Jerusalem, should return and be king of Jerusalem when they successfully take it back. Whereas Philip is closer to Barbarossa and the Holy Roman Empire, so he believes that a man by the name of Conrad of Montferrat should take the crown. So the fact that they're arguing over who should be king again intensifies the rivalry between them. Okay, and that's before they've even really got to the Holy Land. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave it there for that one. That's the journey to the Holy Land, and you know, some reasons why the rivalry between the two kings intensifies. Philip doesn't last much longer. He ends up going home pretty soon afterwards. We'll look at the start of the crusade and some of the battles that happened in the next podcast. So hopefully you'll join me then. Best of luck with your exams, folks. And as always, keep working hard. Bye-bye.